Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Okay, Proper Mental Podcast, episode 23, and this week I'm joined by Kate Lucy. Kate Lucy is a journalist, an editor, and an author. She's formerly the editor at cosmopolitan.co.uk, and she's written for the likes of Vice, The Guardian, and the Sunday Times Style. She also writes a regular column about mental health for Metro, and she just released a book, and it's called Get a Grip, Love, and Amazon calls it a hilarious, honest story about living with depression and how to self-help guide to recovering from a mental illness. And Kate calls it, on her Twitter bio, a book about being a sad twat. And it's a really, really, really good book. I read it and really enjoyed it. And yeah, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could get Kate on the podcast? I think she'd be a really, really good guest. And I did, and she was. So it worked out really, really well. I suppose Kate's book is a lot, it's just a really good, thorough look at depression. And it's a mixture of kind of like her own experiences and useless advice that she'd been given over the years. Because, you know, when it comes to mental health, there is a lot of people that don't really have any business offering advice, offering it anyway. And most of it is rubbish. So she looks at that, and that's dead funny. You know, there's a lot of humour in the book. And that's a funny thing to say about a book about depression, but it is something that me and Kate talk about quite a lot during this chat. But depression itself, if you look at it out of context, it is funny. It's so weird. And quite often when you're not well, when you're struggling, you say and do things that are quite bizarre. And if you get to a place afterwards where you're feeling good and you can look back, it's quite shocking. And it is funny, some of the things that, I will often think about things that I've said over the last few years, and it does make me laugh. It's the concept of depression is bonkers. And Kate finds a lot of humour there. And that's really, really relatable. The whole book is relatable. So there was parts when I was reading about Kate, but I could have been reading about me. And she looks at depression from all different angles. She looks at some of the more sort of sciencey stuff behind it around the reasons why. And she looks at, there's a lot of, you know, actionable things that you can do to make yourself feel a bit better. And it's just really good. And I'd say probably like my favorite thing about it is that if you've got someone in your life that doesn't understand what you're going through, or if you want to try and have empathy for someone in your life who's going through something and you just can't understand it, then this is that book. That's that book when someone says, you know, I don't know what you're going through and I want to understand, you give them this book. Because just the way it's written and the way it discusses the topic of mental health and mental illness and everything that comes with it, yeah, puts it in a really relatable package. And it's just brilliant. So I was made up to get Kate on the podcast. And we had a really, really good chat. We talk about all sorts of things. We talk about getting useless advice. We talk about speaking openly about having a mental illness and, you know, what it's like to, you know, to tell people or to have people know that you're not well. We talk about how depression affects the people around you and your loved ones. And yeah, we go on a bit of a tangent at one point about magic mushrooms and ayahuasca and retreats and all that sort of stuff. One thing that we talk about that I think is really important that I haven't had another guest bring up is that sometimes when you're having a bad day, rather than going on a mission to find all this, you know, some sort of healthy cure, you know, just hitting the couch with a tub of ice cream and watching some rubbish television is a really good survival technique to get you through a rough patch. And yeah, we talk about that quite a lot. And it turns out me and Kate have quite a lot of trashy television in common. So that's pretty cool. And there's some recommendations out there. So if you're looking for something rubbish to watch to kind of distract your head and make you feel better, this is the podcast for you. You can get Kate's book absolutely anywhere. I think I've put a link to Amazon in the episode notes, but yeah, you can pick it up in all the main bookshops. You can connect with her on Twitter at @KateLucy_ or Instagram @KateLucy. If you want to catch up with me at Proper Mental Podcast in all the usual social media places. If you listen to this and you like it, if you could go to iTunes and leave me a 5-star review and some kind words, that would be really, really good. Yeah, that's everything you need to know. This is Proper Mental, episode 23. Kate Lucy, thanks for listening. Enjoy. Hit you with it. Fantastic. So here's another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast, and I'm joined today by Kate Lucy. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm chilling out. I'm lying in bed, actually.
Yeah, you look really comfy, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Where are you, Kate? You still in Paris?
I'm not, actually. I came back to Wales, where my family live, beginning of December, because I got a bit worried about the whole pandemic situation, and maybe that my family would get sick and I wouldn't be able to come over and see them because they'd stopped all the travel. So I came over in December and then ended up staying because the pandemic didn't really die down.
Yeah, yeah.
But also Wales is doing amazingly with the vaccinations. Like even 18-year-olds have had their jabs now. So
that's fantastic. Yeah.
I'm just waiting to get my second one and then I'll bugger off somewhere else.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'm Welsh. My family are from Wales, and my auntie's a nurse and she's been giving the vaccine out since like day one up in Swansea. So
nice.
Yeah, she's been like churning them out, man. They're doing like 12-hour days up there and really, really getting through. It's been really impressive how it's
It's crazy. I've been volunteering at the vaccination centres and they're just absolutely like just really getting through them.
Yeah, it's wicked. It's quite
yay for Wales.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, or anyone who's English who's listening is probably just all switched off now, right?
Oh, sorry. But also to other countries which are available.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, indeed. So I've been reading your book, mate. I've got it here. And it's wicked. I always find it really, really weird when you've read someone's book and then I speak to them, because it's almost like impossible to say I really like your book without sounding like really patronizing. But I really enjoyed it. And was it kind of always your plan to write a book? How did that kind of, the idea of that come about?
I mean, I think a lot of people think that they've got a book in them. I did always want to write one, being a journalist and a writer kind of as my job anyway. But yeah, it was never like a plan. I never knew that I would write one about being sad. I did never thought that depression would be the subject du jour. And yeah, that was kind of a surprise when it turned out to be that's what I had the most to say about. Because people say, write what you know. And I was like, well, I know about being sad.
Yeah, it's I think my favorite thing about it is like how it's really funny. I'm sure people have said that before, and I'd be reading it and my wife would say, what are you laughing at? I said, oh, just this book about depression. And she'd be like, you what? But it's something that really I think warmed me to your writing, because I like to laugh at depression and I think it's quite important, and I would never laugh at other people's stories, but depression as a thing is quite amusing, really, if you think about it out of context, like what it is.
Yeah, makes you quite narcissistic and annoying and unable to function, and
lots of like feeling sad and not being able to explain why. It is a bit ludicrous. It is a bit ridiculous. Yeah. And was that kind of like intentional? Do you say funny stuff about depression? Is that like your take, your way of dealing on it? For me, I'd say it's something that helps me deal with depression.
Yeah, for sure. I think I think maybe it's a British-y thing anyway, but like just in terms of being very self-deprecating and like making the joke about yourself first so that anyone else who gets there, like, I've already made it, actually. I'm aware that I'm a sad twat. I'm aware that this is annoying. Like, make jokes about myself and self-deprecating stuff all the time. So yeah, I think it is largely a coping mechanism. But also because like laughter is the counteract to being depressed, so if you can laugh at something, if you find something amusing, then in that moment you're not feeling sad.
Yeah, that's so, a really lovely way of describing it.
Comedy.
Yeah, I kind of see it as a control thing for me. Like, you know, like I know in your book you mentioned depression as a bully. And then if I'm taking the mick out of it, then I see myself as the bully and, you know, being nasty about and to depression makes me feel better about myself. So it's like bullying reversed, you know?
Yeah, taking the control back. I think that's definitely a part of it too, for sure.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you've been through something awful or going through something, but, you know, come out the other side and have some understanding of it as well, then, you kind of feel like you can, right? You know, if I've had conversations on here and there's been like funny patches and stuff, that's the stuff I get the best feedback about, is if like we're being a bit daft talking about it and stuff like that. That tends to really resonate with people.
Well, also, I think because everybody finds themselves doing like weird stuff, like when you're depressed or you've got any kind of mental health issue, that you don't usually tell people about it face to face. So then when you hear somebody or you read somebody who's mentioned like something weird that they do, like it's kind of like a laugh of relief as well, to be like, oh my God, me too. I'm not the only one freaking around doing this in my kitchen. Like, oh, thank God someone else is as nuts as I am.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, because I don't know if you're the same, but I can like say things almost in the moment, and as I'm saying it, the other part of my brain is saying, what are you saying that for? That's nuts. Like, don't say that. And your mouth is just carrying on going regardless, right? Coming out with this stuff. Yeah. So how did depression start to manifest itself for you? How did that sort of start to appear in your life?
I think there was kind of two things happening at the same time. So one was that I was just crying all the time. And just like at any moment that I would get on my own, I like, it would be like just needing to sneeze all the time. And then like, finally, like, oh, I can sneeze now, or like needing to go to the bathroom and then finally being able to go to the bathroom. Like just when I was on my own, like I'd be like, oh, thank God. And just start crying. Which was great. And then another, I had like quite a lot of physical symptoms, which I talk about in the book. I haven't read the book for a while, to be honest. I read it so many times before I handed it in. I was like, I hate this. I had a lot of physical symptoms that I thought were something else. Like I was super dizzy all the time, and I was feeling really, really nauseous to the point that I was getting sick sometimes. And just was like, always felt like I was on the edge of vomiting or falling over or both. So I went to get those things kind of investigated, and there was nothing wrong with me physically. And it ended up being suggested that perhaps they were to do with depression, which was surprising. Even though I was crying all the time, I didn't think I was depressed, which sounds really thick.
Not at all. I think a lot of people would say that, Kate. I certainly would. Yeah. And I think the physical side effects do not get talked about enough. That's incredibly common. And it isn't something you hear much, but that's, that's huge how it affects the rest of you other than other than your mind. And it's a really funny one, isn't it? Like for me, there was a lot of like denial about it as well. I thought, well, if I start saying I've got depression, then I've got depression. I really don't want it. So I'm just not going to say anything about anything and, you know, hope
and it'll go away.
Goes away. Yeah. That sort of stuff. Yeah. And it was writing a book about it. Was it cathartic in any way? Did it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was very cathartic to be able to write about it because I wasn't in it anymore. And obviously a lot of people are still in it quite intensely, and I definitely was in it very intensely. So just being able to like look back and write about things like that in the past tense, I was like, look at me now, not crying 24 hours, down to a solid 22. Pretty good. pretty improved there. Self nourishment goals. But also it did like make me kind of, I don't want to say regress, because I don't think it's a regression. It's just, if you suffer with depression, it comes back sometimes. So I think a lot of the stuff that I was talking about and how I was feeling when I was depressed, or like super depressed, I was like, oh, well, that kind of still is true, isn't it? Like, there isn't any point in anything, and why am I alive, and everything is awful, and oh God, I'm going to bed. Like, there was a bit of that too. Cathartic, definitely. And a lot of it was came from speaking to other people about their experiences, and even like just me talking to them being like, oh God, yes, I'm not the only one who does that, or like, oh, that happened to me too, or just like people who had other side effects or symptoms, or it was very it felt, I don't want to say healing because that sounds really pretentious, but it was helpful to speak to people who had other stuff going on or who had similar stuff going on, just to hear different sides of the big sad wheel of doom.
Yeah, definitely. I found that from doing a podcast about mental health. You know, everyone I've spoke to has said something that I've gone, oh, I never thought of it from that angle before. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, you've just described me and I didn't know that was me. And, you know, just things things like that. Yeah.
Just go for a lie down afterwards. Like, whoa.
Yeah. After a heavy episode, it's definitely that's my go-to. Is like, yeah, I'm going for a nap. Yeah. Just done. That's the thing to do. Yeah. Was did a lot of people know that you had problems with depression? Or was the book like your coming out party, so to speak?
My family knew and my ex-boyfriend knew, but there were a lot of people. I mean, I never really was very public about it before. Not that I have like a public arena. I don't have any like social platform with a million followers or anything, but I never really talked about it. I just never really talked about it to my friends. Like, I'd always make an excuse, like if I didn't feel up to going somewhere because I felt awful and I couldn't stop crying, I wouldn't say that. I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm at work, but really I'm just under the duvet heaving. So I'd never be as honest as that, but I am now, because I feel like I've written a diary and published it. So it's like everything that I say now is probably not going to be as personal as what I've written in there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who were like, oh, you always seemed pretty happy. I never knew you were crushingly sad. And yeah, good, because I was pretending that it was all fine. So
yeah.
Oscar goes to me. Thank you. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's a massive compliment, right? Because pretending everything's all right is bloody hard work. It's really hard work. Yeah. Oh, that's wicked. Because you've written a lot of other articles and stuff like that around mental health as well. So you seem like comfortable, you know, in the space and discussing things and stuff like that. But I suppose, yeah, putting it all in a book is much more of a thing, right? To revisit stuff and to live in it. And
I guess, just to have it also like, just like, it sounds really obvious because this is what a book is, but like one page after the other. Like when I'm writing, normally for work I write for various newspapers or magazines, and you know, it's like an article about this and then an article about that and an article about something else. And then when you read something online that's an article about mental health, maybe you'll read something else about something stupid Boris Johnson said or the weather or a celebrity. And it's not all like, you won't go down, you don't always go down like a hole of the same subject by the same person. So books definitely was more intense.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and now I'm like, well, I don't have anything else to write about in terms of mental health because I've said it all, just read my book.
yeah.
So journalistically it's going really well.
Yeah, that's it. Now I have to find something else to concentrate on. Yeah, when you first got like diagnosed with stuff, did that send you down a bit of a rabbit hole? Were you one of these people that like chased the cause, looking for the mythical cause?
Yeah, I think I was, because I just wanted it to stop. And when I was told that my physical symptoms could well be to do with depression, and I was like, no, I don't think I'm depressed. I think that's for other people. And then I did this NHS quiz. Are you depressed? And at the end, it was like, oh, you are really depressed. So I was like, right, okay, that's why I feel miserable all the time then. So what can we do to stop this happening? So then I went to the doctors, because that's what everyone says that you should do. I say everyone, I mean the robots online, because I was just googling it all at stupid o'clock in the morning and not telling anybody about it. And so the doctor started me on antidepressants and then gave me a referral to CBT, and I wanted both the medication and the therapy to like just stop it. And I was like, okay, so great, I'm on this medication, and if I take this every day, then maybe in 3 weeks I'll just be kicking my heels together and skipping down the street singing Disney songs. Or if I go to this therapy thing, then they'll go, oh, it's because of this, don't wear blue on a Wednesday and you'll be grand. And we're like, oh, thank you, and then it'll just be over. But turns out it's a long process. And sometimes there isn't a cause, you're just sad.
Which
I think is what I've had to come to terms with. It's like, I am lucky enough to not have suffered any kind of mad, like intense trauma or very, very close personal loss. Like I've lost people in my life, but it hasn't been like my mum or my dad or my sister, like touch wood. I haven't had any kind of awful trauma that would have triggered something like depression. I'm just sad for no reason. And that's really boring and also really annoying because you can't go, oh, well, take, here's the cause, just move it away and then you'll be fine. Like, I don't even know that's how it works. It's probably not. It's probably more complicated than that. Please say something. I'm just
No, I mean, it's like, I think, yeah, like therapy in the movies has kind of really bastardized what it's all about, hasn't it? And you know, you think you're going to go and be pushed on a subject and dig something up from your past and everyone's going to like cry and then you're going to move on and get the happy ending. Yeah. We've all seen Good Will Hunting, right?
Yeah, so, I want a montage.
Yeah, that's it, man, a happiness therapy montage. But yeah, it's very much not like that. And I think because we expect that. It is. Yeah, who would have thought, right? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, everyone goes like, I did it. I looked everywhere. I was digging in all sorts of things. I was like Googling, you know, plane tickets to Peru to go down, you know, the ayahuasca route and, mm-hmm. you know, all these sorts of things that you just think are gonna fix it. And one thing I really, really liked about your book, there was a lot of really like actionable, you know, ideas about, you know, just kind of looking after yourself and managing stuff. But then there was also really, really nice stuff in there as well, you know, about just sort of surrendering to being a bit sad and eating the ice cream and, you know, yeah. and going to bed and stuff like that. And I find a lot of pressure in like the self-help world. And I know that's not, you know, the aim of your book, but to do all the things, you know, to do all the stuff. It's like a stick to beat yourself with, right?
Yeah. It's like, okay, so you're sad. Here's how to not be sad. Here's how to be less sad. Here's how to help yourself when you are feeling sad. But I think a lot of it for me, as you just mentioned, is just going, okay, you feel sad. Like you feel it. Like if you try and cover it up, it's just going to like sizzle away underneath something and probably then come out at the wrong time. Like if you feel awful, go to bed. If that's what you need to do, go for a walk or like go sit in the dark or go like stand in the rain and just sob dramatically. whatever you need to do. I don't want to say to like indulge it, but just to accept it and to feel it. And there's like, rather than trying to bat it away and pretend that it's not there and going like, oh, okay, well, I'll do my Bob Ross art course instead or whatever. Like just if you feel sad and you need to cry and you can cry, just cry.
Yeah, just definitely. Yeah,
I think that's certainly helped me anyway.
And a lot of things out there, advice is like, it almost seems like a little bit extreme, you know, and people recommending like morning routines that take 2 hours and stuff like that, and you think that I can't make that happen.
That's
and
then depressing just reading it.
Definitely. I'm a big fan of really, really trashy television. That's my go-to.
Oh, yeah.
If I, you know, I'll like throw on, you know, Married at First Sight Australia.
I was just about to say, did you watch Married at First Sight Australia?
Yeah,
Flaming Gomez.
Mate, yeah, that's a go-to for me to distract my head. And the other one I really liked on Netflix is that 60 Days Inside. If you watch that, where they ordinary people go to horrible undercover in horrible American prisons for like 2 months and live as an inmate and try and gather information for the governor so he can improve his prison. And it's like, it's very American, very trashy, really awful, but yeah, fantastic distraction. Yeah,
amazing.
But I feel like
First Sight Australia for sure. RuPaul's Drag Race, every kind of iteration in every country from every season, and yeah, just old episodes of Friends or Will and Grace, which is like kind of basic, but
can't go wrong. Yeah, can't go wrong. And it, you know, in your book you mentioned reading as well, and that's something that's not talked about. Fiction for me is a massive I suppose crutch almost, you know. That's I can jump in a book and I can just stay there, you know, for a long time, and I find that really, really comforting. And you know, there's so much pressure to talk about mental health, and we seem to, everyone just talks about talking about it, but we need actionable steps that people can sprinkle into their life, right?
And rather than just going, I've got depression, me too, oh, my friend's got depression, oh yeah, my mum's got, oh yeah, great,
now what,
bye then.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but also definitely. If you're reading, like, it's so different to if you're watching something on the TV, because if you're watching something on the TV, then often you're kind of scrolling through your phone at the same time, or maybe you're like looking at something else, like a magazine, or kind of flipping through a book. Or I've dated myself then by saying magazines, because I don't think the kids buy magazines but you know, when you're in a book, you can't really be doing anything else, because it means you stop reading, you get out of the book. So I think that's like anything that just consumes all of your brain energy gives you a little break, like just gives you a little relief, like it's that you've taken the foot off the sad pedal for a bit, because
you're
concentrating on something else.
Yeah, sure. I suppose, you know, it's like the definition of mindfulness, isn't it, really? Like, you don't have to be sat on a rug with your eyes shut to do mindfulness. It can be anything that keeps your mind from going mad.
Did you go on ayahuasca retreat?
I you know what, when it comes to like you know, that sort of plant medicine, I always kind of thought, like, well, what if it convinces me that the dark thoughts are the right ones, you know? Or if I have some realization that, you know, I don't know, I've got to like leave your wife to find happiness, and I feel like, you know, having my family is like a really good it's a really good anchor for me. And it's very much a reason for me to keep doing the work. I don't want to go to Peru for 3 months and come back and decide that that's not me anymore. But was it something you looked into yourself?
Yeah, definitely. And at the moment, I'm really hot on the idea of a psilocybin retreat.
Okay, yeah.
They're doing psilocybin, I'm sure you know, is the like active ingredient in magic mushrooms. And now it's being really, really researched into its effects on depression and general effects with mental health, people with post-traumatic stress disorder, people who are on antipsychotics, people who like just lots of different benefits it seems to have for mental health. And they do a couple of retreats, Jonathan Rossing there, retreats in Jamaica. And I was reading about one that you have like supervised doses of psilocybin. So you go and you have, there's like a small group of people there, like 7 or 8. And then you get a member of staff from this like hotel in a beach in Jamaica, which is gorgeous anyway. You have a dose of psilocybin, which is measured depending on your like height and weight and, you know, how much you handle. And then you kind of have it a supervised dose, like they're not sitting next to you all the time like, you're right, what are you feeling, like how are you going, imagine it. But like if you have an awful time and you start crying and screaming, like they'll be there to like comfort you. Or if you're like, I want to dance, then they'll dance with you. And then you take 3 doses over the course of I think 7 to 10 days. And you have, like, from what I've read about it, you have different experiences on all of them, and then, like, feel pretty good by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, up for that. Yeah, especially from the beach.
That sounds nice. Yeah, that sounds really nice. Yeah, there's a documentary on Netflix about this fella, and you know, bless him, he's in a real mess, and he ends up in like Peru, and he's there for months. And at one point, he's living in this hut, and they say to him, "All right, for the next." Like month, the next 30 days you can't eat, you got all you can drink is water and smoke loads of tobacco, and that's just what he does for a month. And then they say, now you're ready to start getting into it. And I thought, oh, I'm not really down with that, but you know, a beach resort,
so dry.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah. That's, but you know, a beach resort in Jamaica, yeah, that sounds all right. Yeah.
And there was one line I remember from the article, I think it was on the Times, and they said that every morning the butler filled a silver trinket case with freshly rolled joints.
Oh wow.
And I was like, sounds like my kind of butler.
That sounds nice. Good retirement plan, that one.
Yeah, but it's expensive though, so if anybody listening has the money to go, if they could tell you what it's like,
that'd be great. Yeah, you're welcome on if anyone's listening. We'd like to know how you got on. Yeah, what's your go-to? You mentioned like just jumping in bed. Is that kind of like, does that sleep work for you? Yeah,
not even necessarily sleep, just like lying down in the dark, which sounds very melodramatic, as a lot of things about depression do. But if I'm feeling awful, it just, there's nothing really else I can do. And if I try and not feel awful, I just end up getting quite snappy,
right,
and cranky and irritable and just being annoying. And annoying myself and being annoying to anyone who's around me. So it's just like, I'm just going to go and have a lie down. But yeah, if I'm like at my sister's house, which I am most of the time now, And I say, I'm going to go and have a lie down. She's read the book. So she's like, do you mean cry? Maybe I do mean cry.
Yeah.
I'll come down. When I come back downstairs, I'll be better though. So, well, not better, but, you know, improved.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I will cry. Depends what's happening over in Australia around the wedding. You know, see what that inspires, whether that inspires tears or not. Yeah. Right?
Depends if Jessica's cheated on her husband again.
No, but that's, you know, like sleep is huge. I'm like, yeah, I'm a napper. Me, that's my my go-to. That's you know, something I really believe in, restocking that energy, because it's really energy intensive, isn't it?
Yeah, I was speaking to someone the other day who said that they felt like they were kind of, if they were going for a sleep all the time, they were like copping out on life a bit, and they didn't want to be like giving into it all the time. And I was like, just think about it like as putting yourself on charge, like exactly what you just said. Like you're just plugging yourself in for a bit, and then you'll be ready. Like, not necessarily ready to go, but definitely more ready than you were before.
Yeah, that's a wicked way of saying it. Yeah, put yourself on charge. Because I suppose, you know, if you're worried about how much life you're missing, you've got to think about the quality of life that you are taking part in, right? So, you know, you've got to be, if you're willing to maybe set aside a couple of hours to refresh, the other bit's going to be a bit nicer.
Yeah, well, that's the goal, isn't it? Sometimes, as you know, you have a nap and then you wake up even groggier than you were before. You don't know what day it is, what time it is, and you want breakfast and it's dinner time and it's...
Just one of them. Yeah. Is there anything else that's like a go-to for you, Kate? Is there anything else that you kind of like swear by that works for Kate?
If I can make myself do it and it's like not pouring down with rain, which, as you know, in Wales is rare, going outside, just going for a walk and just like change scenery, see things that are bigger than me, see more people than, like, that's just like the demons in my brain, like just walk around, sit in a park somewhere and just not talk to anybody but be around people, and just that kind of, it just, I don't know, it never like makes me feel healed or anything, but it's just, it helps kind of shift my mind from one bit of doom to a lesser bit of doom.
Yeah, change that state a little bit. Definitely.
I do smoke weed a lot to help me get to go to sleep. I don't know if that's good or bad, but sometimes you're just lying there for hours and sleep isn't coming, and you know you're exhausted but it doesn't happen. Sometimes I get baked. Ice cream. I mean, it sounds really petty, but
not at all.
Like, ice cream, it does help.
What's your go-to?
Like, whatever is available.
Oh, really? Ice cream, yeah.
Literally any. I started to try and do that, like, you know, the low-calorie ones, because I was getting through, like, all kinds of tubs. But it's just not as good as the full, like, proper Ben & Jerry's chunky, like, everything full fat, full whack in your face. Great.
Yeah. If you need to feel good, right?
Just there's no point trying to eat, like, cardboard. It's not going to help. It doesn't give you the same satisfaction.
Yeah,
it doesn't make your pupils dilate the same way as when you have a bite of Chunky Monkey.
And how is your you know, you're very open in a book. How's the like the response been from like people around you? Have people been you know, has it changed? Because we worry about, one of the reasons we, or everyone, or me, or whatever I'm trying to say, is how we feel about speaking out about it, is other people's reactions. You know, we think that people are going to think of us a certain way, or treat us in a certain way, or think less of us and stuff like that. And, you know, that's one thing, just saying to someone, oh, I'm having a hard time, please don't judge me. It's another thing to like whack everything in a book and say, there you go, world. So how's that been, really? Has that kind of affected anything?
A few people have said like that they feel bad because they didn't know I was that sad, and that they feel like they should have done more, or like noticed or helped, or been there for me, which I find quite sad, obviously, because I'm always fucking sad. But I find it's quite like, it tugs on the old heartstrings, like, because I was trying to not be sad, like I was trying to show people that I was super cool, everything was chill, stone cold bitch, no feelings, but actually crushing inside. And the fact that they didn't know it was like, not because they didn't do a good enough job of paying attention or whatever, it's because I was hiding it. And I didn't have any of it on display, so it's nothing to do with them, it's all
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you think it's like an experience thing why people find so hard to relate to it? Because it's, and you know, unless you've been poorly, it's very hard to understand what it's like, because the words don't do it justice. Like you can't, if you could try and describe what you're feeling, and someone who's been through it would go, yeah, I know what you mean. It might have been a bit different for me, but I know what you mean. But then to someone who's not been depressed, it's almost an alien concept. And the sort of words that you have to use don't have enough weight. Like saying you're sad, people go, I know what that is. And you sort of, you don't, you know, like it's hard, isn't it, to describe it to people?
Yeah. I think lockdown and the whole pandemic has kind of helped in the way I describe it to people, because some, like, especially like in the first lockdown when it was just, we had no idea what was going to happen, or how long this was going to go on for. And every day people were waking up being like, oh God, the same again. I just feel like doom and this doesn't have an end. And I'm tired, even though I haven't done anything, and I'm lethargic and I'm grumpy and I'm sad. I was like, well, it's kind of like that, but every day for no reason.
Life in lockdown.
Yeah, but like lockdown on steroids, I guess. I don't know. I always find it very, very hard, like, which is why I wrote the book, just to see if it would help people who never suffered with depression, because I find it really hard to imagine what that's like. Because I think everybody must be depressed. Because why would we? Because meh.
are we looking at the same world sort of thing?
So I find it hard to understand what that's like, and like, what, you don't cry every day? What are you taking? Can I have some of it? So it's kind of, I don't know, optimists and people like that. I am optimistic, but people who don't suffer or who've never suffered, I mean, great for them, but I don't understand it. So it's similar the other way around too. But
yeah,
lots of people have said that they're going to give the book to people that they live with or people that they know, or, you know, who don't suffer with depression, because it would help them understand it a bit more, which is great.
Yeah, very much so. And a really great thing about it is that there's a lot of areas where you look at you being poorly from other people's perspective, and I like that's fascinating as well, you know. Like I did an episode of this, our highest downloaded episode is one I did with my wife, and we just talked about everything, how she experienced me not being well, and that really resonated with people. And I think that's also a conversation that you know, that's not had enough, because it's very easy for people to say, oh, just cheer up, love, or whatever. But when you live with someone and you love someone and you're married to someone, you can't just tell them to cheer up. You're kind of in it together, but only one of you is in it, and that's a strange space, right?
Definitely. Like a lot of people have said, because I in the book I'd like transcribe a conversation I had with my boyfriend at the time about what it was like for me to be a sad twat and him to have to live with it. And yeah, it's like you said, like only one of you's in it, but you've kind of both in it, and the other person doesn't get a choice, but also you don't get a choice. And I think that's one of the things that is most important for them to understand, is like, you're not choosing to do this. Like, you're not being a grumpy bastard. You are, like, you can't control it. If you wanted to, like,
if you
could be happy, you'd be happy. If you
and it's an illness, right?
And rainbows and dancing around the kitchen and like happy film montage stuff. Like, I keep talking about montages, I just really want to be in one. But it's not your choice, and it's not anything that they've done. And it's not, and there might not be anything that they can do to help, which is kind of a harder one to deal with, I think. But
yeah a lot of quite bizarre depressive behavior is like cries for help, even though you know the person you're giving them to can't, you know, like some of the, and it's, you know, I've found my behavior sometimes got quite bizarre because I was really, really wanting like my wife Kim to help me, but she was doing everything she could, and I knew she was, and I wasn't really expecting any more, and I didn't know why I was doing it, and it just becomes this like really weird scenario, doesn't it?
But I think you just, I mean, for me, I think I wanted the reassurance that, like, okay, you're mad, but I'm not going anywhere. Like you're mad, but I'm here, and like, even if you don't want to talk, or if you just want to hug and not like talk about something different, or if you just want to cry on me for a bit, or like, and I wanted the other person to know that it was not their fault.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not because you don't love me enough, because you can love somebody with all of your everything and that won't stop them being depressed.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's the hard thing for family around in general as well, you know, is that, like, particularly parents, when you speak to parents, and like the first thing mum always says is like, what did I do? Is it my fault? And you say, no, no, not at all. It's not.
That's the sequel, actually.
Oh, mate. So what's on the cards? What's on the cards next? You know, are you, you know, you're waiting for vaccine number two, and then.
Waiting for vaccine number two, which, I mean, it's like when everybody was waiting for 2021, it's like, it's still going to be crap on January the 1st. Like, it's still, like, Donald Trump hasn't left yet. And, like, you know, I mean, I would like to move back to a different country, like, hopefully France, because I like learning the language and I like the food. France is doing an absolutely awful job at dealing with the virus. So it might not be for a while, but I'd like to definitely go somewhere and maybe, I mean, travel seems like the most impossible thing at the moment, but it does really help, like, me feel like I've got a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
And
I'm lucky that with my job, because I'm a freelance writer, I can do it remotely. So I could do that if the world wasn't covered in plague. Maybe travels around Wales.
I think any sort of like travel to, because it's a mixture, isn't it? It's a mixture of having, I suppose, enough time with yourself to figure some stuff out, but with enough new experience to keep you distracted, so you're not like completely isolated, because you still got to figure out where the supermarket is. And sometimes even like having practical tasks is a really good way of keeping your mind off being unhappy. And if you're on the road, or if you're traveling or living in a strange country, then you've got a lot of practical tasks just to kind of like get through a day and feed yourself and find somewhere to live and all that sort of stuff.
And the volunteering that I've been doing is really helpful as well, because it just, like, it's to do with the pandemic, so it helps me feel like more hopeful, because people are getting vaccinated and like there's an end in sight. But also because it's just like you said, it's like practical task, it's not about you. You're speaking to other people, you're doing something for something else. And it, if you don't go, you're letting other people down. And that's a reason to get out of bed and go.
Yeah. Like, a
lot about depression for me is finding a reason to get out of bed.
Yeah, definitely. And do you find like it's made your experiences with it, have they made you more like compassionate about other things, like, you know, like wanting to help, wanting to contribute, wanting to do things for other people? You know, like, because I find a lot of people have been through stuff like to talk about it, like to have podcasts and write books and, you know, go on and talk about it and stuff like that. And it kind of makes, for me anyway, my own personal experience, you kind of, I see other people a bit differently now. I'm like a little more tolerant than maybe I was. I'm keener to put myself forward, but maybe that's just a me thing, right? And not
I think it works for me too. I think I just assume that everyone's depressed and that everybody's having an awful time and hiding it and polishing a smile on top of a like turd, but I just assume that everyone's got something going on and you don't know what it is. So there's never any need to be a dick. And I think in my early 20s, I was definitely a dick to people. Like, I must have been awful. I don't think I got the empathy gene until I was like in my late 20s. But yeah, I just assume that people are going through something that you don't know anything about.
Because
lots of us were. And just trying to, like, another reason that I wrote the book was because when I started to read books about people with depression, I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That helps me understand it. Or that makes me feel like I'm not alone in my sadness, and I'm not the only person to have ever felt like this. And I'm not actually a narcissistic asshole. I have a mental illness. So writing the book and talking about it more, I hope would help at least one person go like, oh, okay, that's kind of similar to something I've experienced.
Yeah.
At least not just me being a twat. We're all twats together.
That's it, man. I mean, relatability is huge, I think, and it really is. And there's a lot of, it can bring a lot of a lot of peace, can't it, when you're struggling to feel like that. And you're right, everyone is going through stuff. And you know, you can kind of and I have talked about this before on the podcast, but you can almost like spot it in some people, and they might know. Yeah. And you kind of, you get a vibe, a bit of a sixth sense, and you kind of like, oh, you're sounding how I sometimes feel. And
yes.
I'm sad that you're going through that, you know, like yeah. It's because yeah, you people are, when you've been good at hiding it yourself, you don't, you can sort of, you know that other people must be that good as well.
Yeah.
So other people definitely. Are going through stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's like, I don't know, just thinking back to either how I was feeling then or how you were feeling then, or maybe how I feel now. It's just like, if I knew that somebody could see in me that I was feeling as dark as I was, would I have wanted them to say something? And what would I have wanted them to say?
Mm.
And then try and do that for other people.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, because I think we can, like, as a society, I think we can do more, because, you know, numbers, something ain't right. Numbers are going up, you know. Yeah. And you know, there's never been more people talking, there's never been more books, there's never been more like articles. Yeah. TV shows, everything, and yet the numbers climb. That has to be more than just a fluke, you know, because I think of mental health related stuff, it's your biochemistry, right? It's your physiology going berserk for some reason. And like, it can't be a coincidence that everything is rising. And I think we do, yeah. You know, we do need to do a bit more, maybe, to be proactive rather than just reactive to it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is about, we touched on this earlier about, like, it's great that people are having a conversation, but what, what's happening because of the conversation?
Yeah, what now?
Yeah, what now? Like, I saw a tweet the other day that was like, oh, it's always reach out and talk and never here's loads of cash for no reason. It's like, well, yeah, everyone's no one's got any money, no one's got a job, like everybody's having a crap time.
Yeah,
but, you know, like, not necessarily loads of cash, but some kind of here's something tangible. Or
yes,
but then what is that thing? Is it therapy for everybody? Is it medication for everybody? Is it, like, because different things work for different people? So
very much so. Yeah, it's very yeah, it's like an individual puzzle, isn't it, that you have to kind of solve. Yeah, so yeah. You know,
puppies,
yeah, hey, puppies and ice cream and Australian people getting married to strangers,
keeping on them being all gross about it.
Yeah, that could be the thing. Yeah. Oh, wicked. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Kate. I really, really appreciate your time. And yeah, I loved your book. It's great. Yeah, it's really, really good. And I think it will be a book for me that exactly like you said, if someone wants to understand a little bit more about, you know, things I talk about or stuff like that, I think it was a really fantastic resource. And as well, like, sorry, I'm just about to say goodbye and then just carried on rabbiting on. It's kind of what I do. But a lot of, for reading books about mental health, sometimes you have to really watch what you read. But I didn't find that at all with your book. Like, it was,
what do you mean, watch what you read?
So some things can be quite triggering or quite, you know, mm-hmm. like, I have to be careful when I consume stuff. So there's some fantastic books about mental health, and they're on my shelf, and I think, nah,
you've got to be in the right
mind. Yeah, very much so. But I think yours was like a really, really good for that, how it kind of navigated, you know, the sadness with, you know, some funny things and some, like, really, really well, really well balanced. Yeah, sorry to turn that into a book review. That was really weird, but thank you very much.
Nice.
But thank you very much for joining me, Kate. I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
No worries at all.
Thank you for listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.